You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hour two on this Monday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Glad to have you on board. Stay a while. You can watch on Peacock or TV Partners. You can stream all 3 hours if you like, or at least the next two. Download the app. And our radio affiliates around the country, we are closing in on 400 cities nationwide. Wild opening week. Order restored to some degree in the March Madness NCAA tournament, at least three number one seeds. Gonzaga, Baylor, Michigan, all advanced to the Elite Eight. If you pick chalk in your bracket, you're probably doing okay right now. You probably lost Illinois or Ohio State earlier. Got burned by Alabama's loss last night. A lot of people had Florida State, but Michigan roughed them up. For the most part, the tournament has gotten back on a predictable track, if that's possible. If it stays that way, it would mean a Gonzaga-Baylor showdown in the title game. Nobody would be surprised if that happened. These are clearly the two best teams in the country, at least I think, from start to finish. Michigan was in there early, in my opinion, the first at least 2 months. But these two teams on a collision course all season long. The Baylor Bears hit a speed bump late in the season, but because of COVID, Baylor faced a pretty good Villanova team this weekend, played the kind of defense that wins championships. Gonzaga has looked completely dominant. You know, they win, and they always win by double digits. And we know the deal. Just when you think the NCAA tournament makes sense, basketball gods throw you for a loop. It's not a question of if, but when something wild is going to happen with March Madness. I gave some numbers on Gonzaga in the first hour. Let me run over a few of those because it's pretty impressive. The Zags have won 33 in a row. Last time we had a college basketball team this successful, Kentucky won 38 straight. That was over the 2014-2015 season. Of the 33 consecutive wins, 31 of those have been by double-digit margins. The last time Gonzaga has lost a game is over 400 days ago when they lost a game in 2020 to BYU at BYU. The Zags 51-1 in their last 52 games, 59-2 since the start of last season. A great run for them. They are the best team in college basketball, but the best team doesn't always win. Seth Greenberg from the Mothership will join us coming up. We'll look at some of the pleasant surprises in the Elite Eight as you have Oregon State. Of course, you have Oregon State and UCLA and USC, Michigan, Gonzaga, Houston, and Arkansas. Indiana has hired Mike Woodson, a less than inspiring choice here. But if you want to bring in somebody old school, doesn't have college experience, it was a great college player, but a lot of NBA experience, I thought they would go for maybe somebody young with ties to Indiana. Sort of like Juwan Howard. Not that that meant you were going to get the guy you wanted. You know, I think Indiana probably realized we're not Indiana anymore. Not in the eyes of recruits and maybe not in the eyes of other candidates who might want to go there. A lot of times you'll have a name included in the list of candidates, but a lot of that is just for bargaining power. You want some leverage to get a new deal at, you know, the school you're at. Les Miles was famous for this. He was always up for a job, it felt like, every year. Someplace else. And Les Miles has decided to stay at LSU. At some point, I would say, Les, why don't you go? See you later. But Indiana got their guy with Mike Woodson, a former great player there, played in the NBA, coached in the NBA, had a couple of good seasons with the Atlanta Hawks, even the New York Knicks. And so he gets that job. Lakers got Andre Drummond. The Nets got LaMarcus Aldridge. You know, get these buyout contracts, then all of a sudden you're kind of free to go where you want to go. And I think what the Lakers, I like what the Lakers did with Andre Drummond because he helps right now. You're still waiting for Anthony Davis. You're still waiting for LeBron. And he will give you that big guy to bang around on, you know, when you face Portland and you face Denver and you need a big in there to bang around. I don't need Anthony Davis to do that. I got Andre Drummond. I like that. LaMarcus Aldridge, I don't know how you're going to share these minutes. You got Blake Griffin in there. When Kyrie comes back, when KD comes back, James Harden, Joe Harris. Like, it's, you may get 10 or 12 minutes out of these guys. But LaMarcus Aldridge, all right, he's going to the Nets. It's like got an all-star team over here and an all-star team over here, and you hope they're going to collide in the NBA Finals. Yes, McLovin?
I had no idea how old LaMarcus Aldridge was, because he's never jumped at any point of his career. I didn't know if he was 29, 32, 36.
Well, he doesn't depend on that, whereas Blake Griffin does. And that's the difference. You know, Blake used to jump. Now, I think he just had a dunk the other day, and everybody went, wow. Like, who would have thought, if I would have told you back when he won the slam dunk contest, jumping over that car, you know, there'll be a day when he'll go a season without dunking, and it'll be a big deal when he dunks. You would have thought I was crazy. Yes, Todd?
Aldridge will be 36 in July.
Yes,
Griffin just turned 32 last week.
That's
he's young.
Old 32. It's an old 32. Yeah, Paulie.
You imagine Andre Drummond. He's been in the league about like 10 years, 28 years old. He's played in two playoff series. He's never played even advanced in any playoff series in his career. The guy averages 17 and 13. And now he's a Laker. He's gonna, you know, he'll be playing deep in the playoffs this year. That's such a wild difference.
Yeah, McLovin.
How old is he? I thought he was older too. He's 28.
28.
Yeah. Yeah, 20 he's not 28 in a couple months. Came in the league at 18.
But you're also, it's a new NBA, and you have somebody like Andre Drummond, who 10 years ago, you'd go, oh, you got to have a big guy. I still think you have to have a rim protector. You have to have somebody who is going to play defense. And, you know, is going to be able to be physical. In the playoffs, you have to have this. During the regular season, you don't. But teams play different regular season, postseason. We've seen that before. And you bring in Andre Drummond, maybe, you know, he can win a championship. You get a big guy in there. And I don't have to expose Anthony Davis. I don't know what kind of shape Anthony Davis will be in when he comes back. But if I can bring in Andre Drummond now and he helps us kind of get through this gap here where I don't have LeBron James for the next 3 weeks, and you're able to hold on to a seed that, you know, you're still respectable and have a little bit of time to move up. Do you realize the New York Knicks are the fourth seed in the East? The Lakers are the fourth seed in the West. I know the Western Conference is still the best conference, better conference, but the Knicks are fourth right now. You'd be hard-pressed to name three starters on that team. You'd be hard-pressed to name the coach on that team. Didn't used to be that way with the Knicks. But if you said, hey, the Knicks are right there with the Timberwolves and the Rockets as worst teams in the NBA, you'd probably get a lot of people go, yeah, I agree. They're fourth seed right now. Yes, McLovin.
And the 5 and 6 are Charlotte and Atlanta. I don't know if you're talking about draft order or standings. Well, how is Atlanta the sixth seed?
I know. And they've been trying to trade people. You know, that's kind of wacky. And then Charlotte without LaMelo Ball. The PGA Tour heads to San Antonio this week. The third oldest PGA Tour event, the Valero Texas Open. That'll be this weekend on NBC. And, of course, you can watch coverage on Golf Channel. Do you want to switch up the poll question there, McLovin?
Yeah, I actually took the other side now.
Okay.
Who would you bet a week's pay will make the Pro Bowl first? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go not put in Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, but have Mac Jones, Trey Lance, and Justin Fields. So based on what Chris Sims said, I might pick Mac Jones, but I think I'm not sure he wins that poll over Trey Lance and Justin Fields.
Yeah, we had Chris Sims on from Pro Football Talk, and first of all, he's said for a while now Zach Wilson is the better pro candidate than Trevor Lawrence. And he says that Mac Jones is the kind of quarterback that Kyle Shanahan wants. Chris has had a 20-year friendship with Kyle Shanahan, but he did say that he did not ask Kyle what he was going to do in that position, trading up to number 3. And do we believe that? Do you believe that Chris Sims has known Kyle Shanahan? They actually have matching tattoos. They got matching tattoos when they were in college. That you wouldn't say, so what are you thinking? Yeah, McLovin.
I believe it's true because it'd be too obvious. Like, Kyle Shanahan can't tell Chris Sims what he's really doing because it'll be too obvious the link.
But it's already obvious. So why not tell him, right? It's already there that you know him, and you're already saying that Mac Jones is a Kyle Shanahan-type quarterback there, whatever that means. But he said, oh, it's about processing information and, You know, I'm the mad scientist and I call the play, and then you just, all you need to do is read one guy, and then you read that guy, and then you throw the ball, and that's what you need to do as a Kyle Shanahan quarterback. Yes, Paulie.
Or if you're Kyle Shanahan, would you use Chris Sims knowing that he could report something for you and will never doubt you because you're tight, but you can make something up? Let's say you wanted to make people think you're doing something. Kyle Shanahan tells Chris Sims that, hey, if we're doing this, we're doing this. You know he's going to report it. No one's going to doubt it because of their friendship.
If you said that they were rumored to be making a trade and going up to get a quarterback, that's using Chris Sims. Now it doesn't matter. If you say you're taking Mac Jones, nobody's going up to two. Nobody's going up to one. You got no competition here. It's Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and then Mac Jones. Yes, Todd.
Is it appropriate to put your close buddy on the spot like that? Regardless of how he
That's
is
what friends are
it.
For.
In that situation, though?
I would ask a direct question to somebody I knew.
It's one thing to tap into sources and you're reaching out to general managers and scouts and all that, but, you know, like some kind of lifelong friend and knowing you're a journalist and you could just put him on the spot like that.
Yeah.
You can't really answer that completely, or it has to become, you couldn't, I'll tell you what we're going to do, but you better just say it to source and hope they don't, you know, connect the two of our friendship together.
Okay. Drew Brees is on the show next hour. I'm going to ask Drew Brees, the analyst, who should the Saints start at quarterback? Is that a fair question?
I think so.
Okay.
But he's not like lifelong friends with these guys. I know they were teammates of his, but you know, these guys always say you always like to leave the place better than where when you were there.
Has he's he friends with Sean Payton. Sean's got to make that choice.
Right, so that's another question. Has Drew Brees asked Sean Payton who's starting week one?
Yes, McClellan.
But there's no way Drew Brees is going to answer that. Is he?
I'm just going to say you're an analyst now. From a football perspective, you have to answer these questions now. You're Mr. NBC. You're Football Night in America. If I was on there, I'd be asking him these kind of questions.
How would you phrase the question? Who should they start or who will they start?
I would ask both. Who should start for the Saints? Who will start for the Saints? Sure. Yes, Todd. Why?
I'm just getting a note. Drew Brees is unavailable. He'd like to reschedule.
Yeah. Well, when he comes on again, I'll ask him the same question. You can run, but you can't hide. You may not come on this show, but if you do, we have to ask those questions there. And I do want to say that I told you so a couple of weeks ago that there was an outlier moving up. I even said it could be the 49ers moving up, and they did. Don't know who they're taking. I was initially told Trey Lance, but Chris Sims said that he thinks it's going to be Mac Jones. Yes, Paul.
Going back to our poll question, which quarterback would be a Pro Bowler first? I looked at the 2017 draft. Trubisky was taken second. Mahomes was taken 10th. And Deshaun Watson was taken 12th. All three of them made the Pro Bowl in their second season. It's interesting to look at their careers, though. Mahomes won MVP.
Yeah.
But believe it or not, Trubisky was a Pro Bowler alternate when 18 guys bailed out. And Deshaun Watson made the Pro Bowl in their second season.
We get caught up on measurables. And as much as you talk yourself in, you can talk yourself out of a candidate. Whatever the scouts with the Bears didn't see with Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson, but they did see with Mitchell Trubisky, still remains. That's a 30 for 30. I would really love to know what the Bears saw with Mitchell Trubisky. Potential, maybe they saw what he could be instead of maybe what he was. Maybe they looked at Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes and thought that's who they are. You know, Mahomes is going to be a Brett Favre-like, not going to take care of the football, a little reckless. Maybe this is as good as Deshaun Watson is going to be. But, you know, we look at Mac Jones, and Mac Jones was referred to this morning. It might have been on the mothership. Subtly athletic. Subtle. I don't know what that means. It sounds like a white guy can do some things, but we can't say he's athletic. He's subtly athletic, deceptively fast. He ran faster than Patrick Mahomes. He ran what Andrew Luck ran. He wasn't far off on Cam Newton.
Caveat, it was a pro day, though.
Okay.
So you had, 1.5 seconds to the actual combine result?
He's almost 6'3". He ran a 4.68. That was his best 40-yard dash. 32-inch vertical. Hand size 9 3/4, which I guess is better than average there. But, you know, I remember 2 or 3 months ago, we looked at Mac Jones as just the guy who was the Alabama quarterback. Like A.J. McCarron. Like, well, somebody's got to play the position, and, you know, you can play it at a pretty good level. Then all of a sudden, you know, Mac Jones, it's because when you let the professionals do their job, they know what they're looking for. At least we think they do. And that's when you started to hear Mac Jones is moving up. Even said that a couple of weeks ago, that they are falling in love with Mac Jones. And these are people, this is one person who does this, breaks down the tape. And he said, we're falling in love with Mac Jones. And then he said, the team is moving up. At least one team is moving up. And I thought it was going to be closer to the draft. Friday, an hour after the show ended, and I'm going through websites and, you know, just following up, see if anything I missed. And I see Mike Florio in Pro Football Talks. It's like the Niners went up, number 3 pick overall. And I go, oh, I'll be damned. They did it. And then the Dolphins went down and then came back up, which means Tua is safe and Jalen Hurts is safe. And the question is, what do they do with those draft picks? But, yeah, Mac Jones. Crazy. Out of nowhere. Yeah, McClubbin.
How about a player comp? Why is Zach Wilson not just the same thing as Trubisky? Because Zach Wilson was pretty bad 2 years ago.
He may be.
Feels a little Trubisky-ish to me.
I don't like one-year wonders.
Right.
I get nervous about that. Like, Zach Wilson was on the radar to start for BYU beginning of last year. Like, he had competition there. And now, like, what happened? You know, Jordan Love was great his junior year, not great his senior year, but he still goes in the first round. Daniel Jones, who knew? Yeah, McClellan.
Well, Joe Burrow was the one who really worked. Looks like he's going to work out. 1 year wonder.
Yes. I mean, he had average. I think if you go back, he might have been viewed as a 4th-round draft pick. And then he had that maybe the greatest season a college quarterback has ever had. Cam had one great season. I just like to see I like to see when the opposition gets another year of tape to look at when they face you. Instead of, you know, you see them once and that's all you see them and that person looks really impressive. But when you get one season to get ready for the next season, that's what I like to see. Mac Jones played well, but I think came out of nowhere. He was going to go to Kentucky. He was a 3-star recruit. He didn't mind going to Alabama to back up Tua. Like, it's crazy how we see these teams and they look at it and they go, like Dwayne Haskins, Cardale Jones. And they're like, I don't know how good they are because they normally play for teams that are really good. And 98% of the time when they take the field, they have more talent than the opposition. That's why I want to see what Trevor Lawrence does. I don't know how good he's going to be in Jacksonville, at least for the first couple of years. He's not plug and play from the standpoint of what Patrick Mahomes had in Kansas City. I mean, that is an ideal position to land in. Experience, talent around you, and then he rose to the level. We'll take a break. We'll talk some college basketball. Did Indiana get the right guy? Is that all they could get with Mike Woodson? We'll talk to Seth Greenberg. And does he have any surprises here as we move on to the Elite Eight? Drew Brees will join us in an hour from now, 20 after the hour, Dan Patrick Show. Rock Auto, rock on. They're there for you 24/7. RockAuto.com, all the parts your car, truck, whatever need. It's a family business. They founded this back in 1999. These are automotive engineers. And they had two goals in mind. And really, they're simple goals, but they wanted to let you see what the information is hidden in those computers and catalogs behind the parts store counter. We've all gone into an automotive store and you ask for something and they have some big book or they get into the computer. I don't know what they're looking at. And then they want to make the prices affordable. They offer reliably low prices. At rockauto.com, you choose the part brands, prices, features you want. You can use your order history, keeping track of the maintenance, repairs, warranties. And if you're like me, you may discover that you know that air filter that you recently replaced was actually installed 3 years ago. Why waste time and money hunting for the parts, phoning, driving, waiting in lines? Go to rockauto.com. Tell them we sent you. Write Dan Patrick in the "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you all the parts your car, truck, whatever need at rockauto.com. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Marion, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Marion. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Marion on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
Our conversation with Seth Greenberg from the Mothership, brought to you by Capital One. What's in your wallet? Got an update on what the Niners were thinking of doing before they made the trade to move up to number three. And it comes back to a situation that I told you about a while ago. I thought this was the direction they were going to take. So I have that for you coming up. But I have to get to Seth Greenberg, the former college coach, ESPN college basketball analyst. Kind enough to join us on the program. Seth, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Give me the most surprising Elite Eight team.
It's got to be Oregon State. Now, it's funny because Oregon State's won 9 of their last 10, but, I mean, that's a team that came in basically sixth place in the Pac-12. That's a team that was picked to come in last preseason. That was a team that kind of reinvented themselves along the way, and it's a great story because Wayne Tinkle, the coach, you know, he had his son for 4 years, couldn't get to the NCAA tournament. His son graduates, and all of a sudden now they're in the tournament. But I think it's a great story. It's been fun to watch. And quite honestly, their team is playing really good basketball. Not pretty, but winning basketball.
The team that didn't advance that surprised you the most?
The team that didn't advance that surprised most is probably Florida State. Florida State was a little bit of a conundrum for me because I look at Florida State and I see a team with length. I see a team that, you know, most times defends, didn't defend yesterday, obviously. Had a lot of different ways to beat you. I just thought their game plan yesterday was so different than what I expected. I expect them to attack Michael Smith on the block, posting up different guys because they have the versatility to do that. I thought defensively early on, you saw that you could not attack that ball screen by switching it. Michigan was exploiting it, creating matchups all over the floor. They never made a change there. So, I was disappointed in Florida State, maybe selfishly because I'm a big Leonard Hamilton fan, and I was hoping to see him get a chance to play in the Final Four because I think he has a special team.
How does Gonzaga lose?
If someone can get Timmy in foul trouble, you get Timmy in trouble, you got to make Timmy defend. I think that's really important. Certain things you got to do to beat Gonzaga. You got to take care of the ball. You got to take good shots. You got to have a four that can guard Kispert, and you've got to make Timmy defend. If you make Timmy defend, and that's why Michigan's an interesting matchup for them, and even maybe USC, but Michigan especially, because if you make him defend and go at him, which Michigan can do with the way they play offensively, playing through him, you take him out. They don't have any really replacement for him. Now, look, they get a shot up every 14 seconds. They get the ball, and Kispert, every time he shoots it, you think it's going in. Suggs, I think, is the number one pick in the draft. They play with incredible, incredible flow. But I think that's the one way you can get after them is by playing for the post. And I'm really interested to see what USC does with their length and with the zone, their ability to cover, their ability to get some extra shots, their quickness. I mean, you're talking about a team that averages 50 points a game in the paint and a team in USC that allows the fewest points and is the best two-point percentage defensive team in basketball. That will be just kind of a game within the game that I think will be interesting to watch.
So you think Kispert's the number one overall pick instead of Cade Cunningham or Mobley?
I think Suggs is the number one.
Oh, Suggs, I'm sorry. So Suggs, yeah, number one pick, and Mobley, Cunningham in the mix there?
Yeah, I think I would go Cunningham second. I would go Mobley third or fourth. Here's my concern with Mobley, and I love him. And I love how hard he plays. I love the type of teammate he is. I love
Do you need to get that phone call?
No, that's what happens in the home office. I don't have a fancy studio like you now. I'm just sitting in my office. Jake the Wonder Dog cannot answer the phone.
Is there anybody that you would stop the interview to answer? Like if Billis called, would you answer?
No, I would actually ignore that for a long time. What all if, I'm going to hear about is, you know, how the NCAA is messed up. We need to pay guys. Mark Emmert needs to go. I keep on telling Bills, Emmert's so bad, take the job. Everyone wants you to take the job. I said it would solve two problems for me. No, hey, Bills is the best. He's so much fun. He's so funny that he doesn't even realize he's funny sometimes.
He's passionate.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, everyone's got a cause. And, you know, this is something that's important to him. But I think USC, I wouldn't take Mobley ahead of Cade. I think the ball's in Cade Cunningham's hand. Now, the one thing I don't – Cade Cunningham's not the athlete Grant Hill is. A lot of people compare him to Grant Hill. Mm. I don't see that. Now, I do see a lot of Jason Kidd and Jalen Suggs. That pass he threw with his left hand off that ball screen yesterday was out of this world. I also love his toughness. I love his leadership. I think his game just translates immediately into the NBA where he can be a winning point guard.
We're talking to Seth Greenberg from the Mothership. Indiana hires Mike Woodson. Not inspiring. He hadn't coached in college. I know there's, you know, the legacy there, being an IU player. But is Indiana Indiana? Does Indiana know that Indiana is not Indiana anymore?
No, I don't think they know. I don't think they know they're not Indiana anymore because they haven't been Indiana basically, you know, since Coach Knight left, really, if you look in terms of the consistency of competing for a national championship. Here's what I think. Mike Woodson will have no problem coaching college basketball, coaching X's and O's, putting guys in position to play to their strengths. The key is going to be, and look, Thad Matta is a nice move by the university. I don't know if that's Mike Woodson's hire or the university's hire, because if it's the university's hire, it's a bad move. Mike Woodson's got to have his own staff. Now, I would sit with Mike Woodson in the interview process and say, all right, coach, we have no concerns about you coaching, but there's a business of college basketball. You know, I don't know if he had kids that played grassroots basketball, but you better have someone who understands grassroots basketball. You better have someone who understands the transfer portal. You better have someone who understands just the day-to-day things you deal with as a college basketball coach. Now, Juwan Howard, his sons were heavily recruited. He understood grassroots basketball. He hired Phil Martelli to sit on his bench to kind of help him navigate, not coaching. I mean, because look, Juwan Howard, think about the apprenticeship he spent. Spoelstra, Riley, the coaches he played for. That's not going to be the issue. Mm. It's the day-to-day operation and dealing with the day-to-day static and minutiae and that goes around being a head coach in college. It's just different from the NBA. So I would, in the interview process, I'd say, hey, we got a guy to play for Knight. We got a guy that won championship. We got a guy that can galvanize a lot of the people that haven't been here. Coaching's not going to be the issue. NBA pedigree, NBA coaching experience, all the things young players are looking for today. What's your staff going to look like? You're going to have Thad Matta, and Coach Matta is great. But handing him that guy to oversee him, he's a grown man. He's 63 years old. He's coached the best players in the world. Do you want a guy over your shoulder, basically, or do you want a guy that you chose to share this experience with at Indiana? So I think he'll hire a former NBA or a current NBA player development guy that wants to get in college. You would think he would hire another coach with college experience. Probably have someone involved that has ties to the university. But, you know, here's the thing. You're only as good as the players recruit and your players develop. And part of recruiting is evaluation. I think Indiana's going to go back to evaluating players that can play and win. Like I thought that, like Matt Painter's figured it out. Now, here's my question for everyone. What Matt Painter has done at Purdue, is that good enough for Indiana, how they perceive themselves now?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I think Indiana fans think they should be the Final Four. I think Indiana fans are similar, even though they haven't had success, to Kentucky fans.
Yeah, but Seth, they see those banners and then they think that somehow they're entitled and it doesn't work. You know, these kids don't go, gosh, I would love to play for Indiana because whatever. That's not the way it works. It's what's the style? Who's the coach? Who's going in there with me? Do we have a chance to win? And they might be there for 1 year, but that's – I just think that Indiana forgot who they were. And you know, I would have stayed with Tom Crean look, this is where they are. What about Texas? What's Texas going to do? Was Shaka Smart, did he jump before he was pushed?
Yeah, I think he made the wise move. Look, Shaka Smart to me wasn't, as it developed, wasn't a good fit. Because Shaka Smart is a guy that lights up the room. Shaka Smart's a guy that coaches this guy's hearts. Shaka Smart's, his DNA and the DNA of Texas in general just didn't fit. I think going back to Milwaukee, going back to his home state, going back to coaching the way he coached his VCU kids, going back to getting those type of kids. Like at Texas, you got to recruit the best player in Texas. You got to recruit the top five guys in the country. You got to recruit certain guys. Shaka Smart was better when he had Junkyard Dogs. Shaka Smart was better when, you know, they had played with a chip on their shoulder. I never saw the Texas team play with the passion and the energy that his VCU teams played with. So I would like to see him go back to his kind of his roots of what made him special as a coach. Now, guys that should take that job, look, Chris Beard's the number one guy. I go watch Chris's team's practice. I speak to his team. His energy is enthusiasm. But Chris Beard's situation and ownership in Lubbock might be far greater than the ownership of people in Austin. It's just a difference in the two communities. If I couldn't get Chris Beard, I would look at Eric Musselman. I would look at Bruce Pearl. I got all that money. If nothing, I'm getting those guys raises. But if I can get them, what do you need at Texas? You need someone to excite your fan base. You need someone to create ownership. You need someone that understands the use of social media. You need someone that understands a playing style that people are going to be excited to come watch. I would get the highest energy winning coach that I can find that can infuse a passion and an energy into the program moving forward.
When you were coaching, what's the best performance you ever saw?
In terms of my team?
No.
Or individual team? Best performance against us? The best performance, well, Hansborough, probably I wouldn't be talking to you right now if he didn't rebound a missed shot on a free throw and knock one in at the end of the ACC tournament. That was kind of personal to me, but the best performance I ever saw was those Jerry Tarkanian's UNLV teams. You know, we played them 2 and 3 times a year. That was, you know, Greg Anthony and Larry Johnson and Ackles and Anderson Hunt and Stacey Augman. They dominated the game. The speed that they played with offensively and defensively, they disrupted you, whether it was in their man, where they didn't let you run offense or the amoeba. One of my favorite great stories, the stupidity of Seth Greenberg, and a lot of stories of the stupidity of Seth Greenberg, is my first year as a head coach, I invited the president McCray, to sit on my bench for our first UNLV game.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it wasn't a good thing. We were down 30 at the half. I gave a great pregame speech. He was all in, and he was right there with us, down 30 at the half. First year head coach, I look at the end of the bench. We're down 30. Not only did I know we were losing the game, I thought I was losing my job. But I survived that, thank goodness. But that UNLV team was just different. Offensively, this Gonzaga team is just different.
Will they be viewed as one of the great teams of all time if they run the schedule here?
Yeah, they should, because so few teams have been able to do that, especially in recent history. Now, people are going to say, look, they play in the West Coast Conference. People are going to say, they are playing against a different group of players. I mean, think about it. I had this conversation with Jay Will today. You know, Jay Will's great Duke teams were juniors and seniors. You know, we have some good junior and senior teams, but the best teams in college basketball, or a lot of the teams in college basketball, are sophomore and freshman driven. The college basketball has gotten younger. Now, look, Villanova won with upperclassmen. Obviously, North Carolina the year they won one with upperclassmen. And it looks like Gonzaga or Baylor or Michigan can win with upperclassmen. Yeah, you can win with upperclassmen, but the very best dudes, the guys that you know are translating into the NBA and are killing it in the NBA, today those guys are all leaving before their junior years. So they're not playing against the same level. Yet I look at this team offensively, and it's just, as a basketball purist, it's beautiful basketball. The flow that they have, they don't reset. It's modern-day basketball. It's got a little European tint to it in terms of the stylistic, but so does the NBA now. It's positionless basketball. The ball moves. It doesn't get stuck. They don't reset. You don't see a high ball screen with 10 seconds left on the clock. It's transition. Boom. The ball's moving. There's great spacing. There's random screens. There's random on and off the ball. It's just they are different. I do think that Michigan's got a shot at them, and I do think that Baylor's got a shot at them. I think those two teams have the greatest because Baylor's got the best backcourt in college basketball.
Seth, great to talk to you again, and good luck with Billis, okay?
I have no chance.
Thank you, Ben.
I appreciate it, man.
That's Seth Greenberg from the Mothership. This interview brought to you by Capital One, What's in Your Wallet. We'll take a break. We'll give you our best and worst of the weekend right after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Prior to the Niners going up and getting the number 3 pick overall, I thought Sam Darnold would be a great option for them as they move forward. Albert Breer from the Monday Morning Quarterback had that story this morning that the Niners reached out to the Jets as a possibility to trade for Sam Darnold. Obviously, they decided that for whatever reason, they were going to go all the way up and get the number 3 pick overall instead of Sam Darnold. Here's another story that I just found. ESPN's Sarah Barshop reviewed the latest lawsuits that were filed against Deshaun Watson, and one of them accuses Watson of trying to cover his tracks and work out settlements with his alleged victims. The lawsuit claims Watson has been deleting old Instagram messages and has reached out to women who have provided him massages in an attempt to reach settlements. We'll keep an eye on this, obviously, with what this could mean, but that's settling a lot of lawsuits that I think the total is now 20. Best and worst of the weekend. Before I get started with you guys, let me bring back a good friend of the show, Jeff in Detroit. He'll start us off. Hi, Jeff. Best and worst.
Well, what's going on, Dan? Thank you for getting me in there. I had a wonderful weekend. I celebrated my mom's 86th birthday. I was also, she's 86, still drives, does everything. I was also able to sit up and watch a game with my 84-year-old uncle. Listen, watching Juwan Howard is wonderful nowadays, man. He has that team playing the way that they supposed to be playing. Out of all of the Fab Five, Juwan Howard's fundamentals were the best, not the most talented, but he was the best. And it's transferring over to his team, which is starting to kind of worry me a little bit because I don't want to see him go to the NBA. I mean, think about recruiting against this guy. He's coming into your city, into your town, and telling you, I played against Jordan. I played with LeBron. And he speaks their language. Marvin the Prince gave me a hell of a question. He says, is Juwan Howard currently right now what we thought Jim Harbaugh would be? And that is a hell of a question because I had to sit and think about it.
All right.
Yep, he is. Yeah, he really is. He really and truly is, you know. And thinking that the thunder that Juwan has brought to the city, I mean, the city of Ann Arbor is a buzz. We want that with Harbaugh. We want it so bad. And we just really want to beat Ohio. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. That's Jeff in Detroit. I guess he had a best and worst of the weekend in there. I'm not quite sure. But Marvin Prince, who answers the phones here, is helping Jeff with questions there. Yeah, you thought you were going to get that with Jim Harbaugh. Of course. Why not? You're Michigan football. Let's go around the room, best and worst of the weekend. I'm going to start with Paulie.
Thank you, Dan. This is a late night Saturday night. Stayed up late. Five overtime NCAA hockey. University of North Dakota versus University of Minnesota Duluth. Your Duluth team, Dan, that you've always talked about. Mm-hmm. The cool thing was Leah Hextall and Dave Starman, were doing play-by-play and color commentator. To keep the energy up from like 7 o'clock till 2 in the morning or whatever that game went to, it was fascinating to see. Really good job out of them. And then the other best of the weekend, Penny Hardaway, coach of Memphis. I told you when he started there, he'd get a title someday, Dan. He did. NIT title for Memphis Tigers.
Yeah. McLovin, best and worst.
All right. Leah Hextall, cousins with Ron Hextall.
Yeah, I was wondering
Flyers.
If that was his daughter.
Yes, cousins.
Okay.
Okay. So I don't know if this is best or worst, but I have a friend who's a huge MMA fan, and he texted me on Sunday and said the new heavyweight champion, Francis Ngannou, is going to be the first UFC fighter to kill somebody in the ring. I thought that was, and he was not joking around. He's like, this guy is so brutal on his opponents. And then I looked up the highlights, and you know how Seton's a little squeamish with UFC?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I was like, I can't watch it. He's so strong. Anyway, Francis Ngannou. So that's my best. Worst is Alabama's free throws, because if Alabama won, I could have come in the solid top quarter of the bracket.
Yeah. You know, it's something simple. We always, when you think of basketball, it comes down to simple things, though. And free throws, forever. It drives me crazy when I see teams that aren't shooting at least 75, 78% from the line. It's a free throw. Also, if I was a coach, I would want to say to my players, let's have a style. Let's get into a rhythm when you get to the line. Don't just go to the line. Don't dribble and shoot. Get there. Calm yourself down. It's almost like when you have a putt. You go through a routine. But to have two, I would always take two dribbles with my left hand, and then I'd get ready to shoot it. I knew every time when I got to the line, two dribbles, comfort zone, bend the knees, go up, shoot it. Keep the arm extended, follow through, and then you'll see, am I shooting too far? Am I shooting it too soft? Am I left, right? Whatever. But have a routine when you go to the free throw line. You know, these guys get there, and it's like, hey, it's a free throw. No, it's the difference between winning and losing in these games, in a lot of these games. Todd, best and worst of the weekend.
Best of the weekend, Oregon State senior guard Ethan Thompson. Some love for the Beavers. Elite Eight win over Loyola Chicago, 65-58. 22 points, 4 boards, and 4 assists for Ethan Thompson. Worst of the weekend, Syracuse shooting against Houston Saturday night in the Sweet 16. 28% on field goals, under 22% from behind the arc. Does not get it done against the Houston.
Where's your Syracuse gear today?
I conveniently left it in the closet.
Yeah, you've been wearing it every day.
Not wearing the orange. So yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah. Kind of like your Broncos, you know?
They're on the shelf for a little
while. No need to bring the gear back, because your teams aren't any good.
Orange and blue.
Well, see what I did. Thank you, Tom. All right. Seton O'Connor, best and worst of the weekend.
My worst of the weekend, and we're only getting a worst, is the U.S. men's soccer team failing to qualify for the Olympics again. It's the third one in a row. Man, that is not a good look.
And the goal that they let in against Honduras.
Brutal. I mean, mistakes happen, right? Accidents happen. Dude just messed up. Unfortunately, it happened to be just a catastrophic mistake.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like this is a, it was a B team that was trying to qualify, right? So the A team or the first team, they were playing a friendly against Northern Ireland, right? But still, it's just such a stain on the program. That's tough.
The last time USA qualified for the Olympics in soccer, Twitter hadn't been invented yet. 2008.
Jeez. But wasn't this the year? Wasn't this the...
See, that's why this is such a problem. It's because the guys who are... Those people were playing a different game. They were somewhere else. This is like the little brothers of those guys, right? So it's still the under 23 team, but it's not the superstar players that we've all been talking about. It's the other guys. It's the B team, and they lost.
We're gearing up for the World Cup.
If we make it.
Yes, well.
Lots of people like to point out that when a small country beats a bigger country, that the difference, like someone pointed out that Honduras has 11 million people and USA has 300 million. If we were allowed to put all 300 million people out there and they only had 11 million, we would crush them in soccer. Like 300 million versus 11, we crush them. But it's still 11 on 11. It's still 11 on 11.
It's
no
still
matter
11
how big,
v 11.
No matter what size your country is, you got to put 11 people out there, I heard.
Yeah. Okay.
If it's not, we're going to beat some teams.
All right. I'm just waiting. I keep waiting. That moment's going to happen. Men's soccer. Our world dominant.
It's coming.
Yeah, it is.
Eventually.
Seton keeps pointing it out. He goes, we got so many young, talented players. And I go,
really
okay.
Do.
Yep.
Really do.
Yep. Yeah, we do.
Dang.
It's coming. Drew Brees, football analyst, will join us coming up. Final hour of the program. We'll bring back a couple of things that Chris Sims had to say about what the Niners are going to do with the number 3 pick overall. I think we'll settle it. We going to stay with the poll question, McLovin?
We have a few more options.
All right. 2 hours in the books on this Monday. More phone calls from you coming up as well. One more item in the second hour, Simply Safe Home Security. If you have 30 minutes, you never have to worry about a break-in at home ever again. That's how quick and easy it is to set up your security system. It's simple, but it's safe. SimpliSafe Home Security. SimpliSafe is incredible because it's easy to customize for your home. Go to SimpliSafeDan.com. You choose what you want, the sensors, cameras, and you'll get help from their experts. And it'll probably take about a week to get to your house, so by this time next week, your whole family can be in bed knowing that your home is going to be safe and guarded. It's simple for you to set up, and then the professionals take over, monitoring 24/7. Go to SimpliSafeDan.com today, and you customize your system. And when you do that, you will get a free security camera. Also, you will get a 60-day risk-free trial, so there's nothing to lose. SimpliSafe, small, easy step to make sure everyone feels safe at home. Once again, 60-day risk-free trial, nothing to lose. That's SimpliSafeDan.com.